welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, we'll hear from Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz as he presents the 2016 State of the City Report. Mayor Berkowitz was speaking at a forum hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce at the Denina Center on August 22nd. The event was moderated by Chamber of Commerce board member Art Clark.
Good morning, everyone. Actually, good afternoon. Welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Macon Monday Forum. My name is Art Clark, broker and vice president of Real Estate Brokers of Alaska and board member of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Today we will hear the 2016 State of the City Report from Mayor Berkowitz, with highlight progress in increasing public safety, improving physical health of the city, tackling homelessness, and increasing development opportunities. There are some cards on the table. If you have questions, please fill them out. We will get to as many as time will allow. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Mayor Ethan Berkowitz.
Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank and ask members of the administration to stand up so the rest of the audience can see you and recognize your achievements. So if you're part of the administration, I know you're out there. I can see you. And I'd also like the audience to help me acknowledge and thank my wife, Mara Kimmel. This is a liberating time in Alaska, and it's a great time in Anchorage. And I say that because we're evolving forward. We're evolving through a period of time where the state's having to grapple with unprecedented fiscal challenges, and the relationship between the state and Anchorage is going through dramatic changes. It's a liberating time, a dynamic time, because the oil industry is going through changes in the state, and our reliance on oil as the driver of our economy is changing, and we have to adapt. And that's what we're doing. Anchorage is a city on the move. We are not shying from our challenges. We are aggressively addressing them. We're confronting adversity. We're doing what we can to get ready for our successes in the future. When I ran, I said we were going to make this city safe, secure, and strong. And that's what it means. It means being safe enough where we can do the right thing, secure enough in our situation where we have a platform to move forward, and strong enough to take advantage of our opportunities. And we get there by being innovative and inclusive. You know, Anchorage is an amazing city. There are 300,000 people here. We are the largest city in the largest state in the most important country in the world. And that ought to be a source of pride and inspiration for us on a regular basis. And the fact that we have more than 100 languages spoken in our streets, in our businesses, in our schools, means that we have the human capacity to take care of ourselves. The fact that we're the largest village in the state says that we're a place that's uniquely Alaskan and distinctly global. So how do we get to be safe? The first challenge we have is to right-size the police department and the fire department. When I say right-size the police department, you look at what's going on in the rest of the country. They have challenges with their police departments. Here in Anchorage, we have a strong relationship between the police and the various communities, but we can make that relationship even better. We're battling back from a period of time where the number of officers on the street had declined to unsafe levels, to fewer than 320 officers at any one time. The goal that we set was to reach 400 officers by the end of this administration. We might hit that goal by the end of this year. We're at 387 officers today. And what that means when you right-size a police department, it means you can bring back the specialty units. You can embark on the kind of community policing that's necessary so the police department can have a proactive engagement with community rather than a reactive response to crime. There are challenges ahead, to be certain, but this police department is a department that everyone in this community ought to be proud of. It's a department that has high and growing morale, and it's a department that does its job with professionalism and serves this community with distinction. The fire department rose to challenges this last year and continued its award-winning ways. Many of you recall that last summer was a summer of spice. Spice is not something that was simply academic to the fire department. They responded to those calls. And we've been able to reduce the number of spice calls significantly. And the fire department deserves a tremendous round of thanks for their role in stepping forward on that particular front. But the fire department has also risen to a different challenge, that the population of this city is changing in its demographics. We are aging. And that means the challenges for first responders is different. So as we added two new ambulances this year, it helped the fire department maintain its award-winning ways when it comes time to addressing heart issues. That's something we ought to be proud of. But in order to maintain the requisite levels of force for both the police department and the fire department, we have to continue to have academies so that the natural attrition of firefighters and police officers who retire or leave the force is replaced. And that's something we've continued to do. We're also doing what we can to revitalize downtown, because a downtown area is the one part of town that belongs to everybody. And this year we saw some amazing coalitions develop. Coalition between the Anchorage Downtown Partnership and the Parking Authority. And they're doing something unique to enhance security and make our streets safer. We helped with the safety improvements in downtown by getting rid of the fountain in Town Square. And that did a lot to change the complexion. And there's one other entity that deserves some credit for improving safety in downtown. That's Pokemon Go. Because that changed things significantly. I also want to point out that as Anchorage grows, how we move through our streets and our trails has changed. More and more people who live here walk or ride their bicycles. And we've launched a Vision Zero initiative to make sure that people who are on bicycles or walking in the streets are as safe as possible. That's something to keep an eye on over the next year, because the challenge we have, the goal we have, is to make sure that the number of accidents that we can prevent drops to zero. It's a challenge that other cities around the country and the world have risen to, and it's one that I have every confidence that we can take advantage of. The final element I want to talk to you about in our safety issue is we have been part of an intergovernmental and interagency approach to combat human trafficking. Human trafficking is everywhere. It's not just sex trafficking, it's also labor trafficking. It's a form of slavery. And we've been able to work with the state and the federal government to begin a series of initiatives that can reduce the incidents in this community. And as we show ways that our community, regardless of which silo you're in, federal, state, or local, which agency you come from, works for the greater good, that should be an inspiration for other entities around the country. But making Anchorage safer is also a question of solving the problem of homelessness. There are approximately 400 individuals who are hardcore homeless, who are high users of municipal and private services. In order to solve the problem of homelessness, in order to do the smart thing that's fiscally responsible, and the moral thing, that's the right thing to do, we have to drive those numbers down. And the first way we do that is by making sure that we can connect people with housing. And over the past year, we found housing for almost 100 of those hardcore individuals. And we have plans in place to find housing for more as we move forward. We've done it with the Housing First initiative. We're able to keep Sitka Place, Merrillfield, Safe Harbor, we're able to open that. Karlick Manor is in place. The John Thomas Building is about to open. Those provide housing. We're looking for scattered site housing. One of the reasons we've been able to do that is we did a terrific job this last year making sure that the agencies, both public and nonprofit, that serve the homeless community, that serve the community at large, can get together. We've convened those agencies. We've broken down those barriers between agencies and made sure we focus on the overall mission, because the overall mission is to reduce and eliminate homelessness in its entirety. We've seen the effects of that already, and we saw the effects because we were able to identify by name the individuals on the street. And every 2 weeks, this group of agencies gets together and has a discussion about connecting an individual with the requisite services or housing that individual is entitled to. We have built a solid foundation, and we've done it by looking at models that other jurisdictions have used. Salt Lake City virtually eliminated the number of homelessness in its community. If they can do it there, we can do it here. And the advantages are profound. It's not just the social cost of almost $60,000 per person for an individual on the street being reduced to about $15,000 or $20,000. It's not just that we've done the right thing of helping those who are the most disadvantaged amongst us. It's about changing how we see ourselves as a city. We have built the foundation to do the right thing. And one of the ways that we're also doing that is by seeking out a fairly innovative way of financing these projects and these proposals. There's something called social impact bonding, or pay for performance bonding. We just received a $1.3 million grant in conjunction with United Way to embark on this proposal. Social impact bonding is going to be an important device that we use moving ahead, not just in this arena, but in other arenas. And what social impact bonding does is harness the discipline and the profit motive of the private sector with the public policy imperative that you have when you work with government. What you do is measure performance. The private sector profits as the demand for government services declines. They are paid for out of the savings. Government benefits and taxpayers benefit because the demand on taxpayer services declines. It's a way for us to bridge the difficult problem you have in government of thinking for the long term, of thinking beyond just one government cycle. It's also a way of making sure you have all the assets that the private sector has to bear to come down to help us solve the problem. And being fiscally wise and fiscally prudent is an important part of what it takes to manage the city. And that's why over this past year, we ran a balanced budget. We will always run a balanced budget. I'm told not to tell you this, but it's actually the law. But we did it in a way with virtually no increase over the prior year's budget. We did it at a time where we increased funding for public safety by $5 million. We did it in a year where we lost $7 million dividend from MLNP because of what the RCA did. We did it in a year where the state cut municipal assistance and revenue. We did it in a year where there were added responsibilities that were passed on to us as the state retreated from its responsibilities. And we did it by a combination of asking departments to save more money. We did it in a way by asking people to be more innovative in how we deliver services. We, for example, this last year started to install more LED light bulbs. The rate of return on that investment is 1 to 2 years. The money you put into those kind of projects comes back in terms of savings in 1 to 2 years. That's smart government. We also did something big last year in terms of energy certainty for this community. MLMP has owned one-third of the Beluga River gas field for about 20 years. It made hundreds of millions of dollars of direct benefit and savings to the people of this community. Last year, MLMP, in conjunction with Chugach Electric, bought another third of Beluga River. And that ought to give us some certainty about what our gas prices and gas availability is going to be for at least the next 15 years. And when you have that kind of certainty, it makes it easier as a business to make investment decisions. It makes it easier as a ratepayer, as a homeowner, to take care of your family. So the fiscal certainty, or the energy certainty that comes from having a secure energy choice, is something that we're very proud of. We've also done a lot to diversify and expand the municipality's economic opportunities. We've done it by reaching into neighborhoods that don't always receive attention, because we think that there's untapped potential across this city. We've done it by forming new alliances with the airport to try and grow those opportunities. 1 in 10 jobs in this community comes from the airport. We've done it in a way by encouraging the people of Anchorage to exercise their creativity and start businesses. Because the growth that we have moving forward, our ability to hold people here, our ability to make sure that people live, work, and play in Anchorage depends on the quality of jobs here and the opportunities that individuals have. This administration is open and ready for business. If someone has a good idea, if someone has a thought about how we can be more constructive in partnering or opening doors or taking down barriers, we will be there. And we do this because we've been building and investing in Anchorage. We've been doing it directly ourselves. The Transit Center is a project we've already begun working on, because this administration believes that if we're going to ask other people to participate in improving any part of our community, we have to be willing to do it ourselves. But that's an Alaskan way. It's not taking a risk. It's making sure that we're being responsible. And that's why this last election, it was so gratifying to see the people of Anchorage adopt bonds, because they showed that they had the people of the city had the confidence to invest in ourselves. And if we have the confidence to invest in ourselves, it makes it that much easier to ask others to invest in us too. And we should be very confident. There are things we still need to attend to. You might notice the third picture up there is of the Port of Anchorage. That port is critical infrastructure. And we've had some progress in terms of solving the way to improve, to make sure the port is healthy moving ahead. We've had some resolution of some of the suits that the city had launched against the prior port construction project, but we have a ways to go. And we're looking forward to finding more partners and more partnership with the state as it resolves its problems, and more partnerships with the private sector, because that's how we're going to continue to move forward. What all of this depends on is that we're being a strong community, and we're a strong community built of strong communities and built of strong individuals. Sometimes we don't draw on our character and our values enough when we confront the challenges in front of us. Too often, particularly I saw down in Juneau this last year, people shied from aggressively addressing the challenges in front of them. That's not what we're supposed to do. Ignoring problems doesn't make them go away. Ignoring problems exacerbates them. But because we're a strong community, because you all have confidence in yourselves, we have the capacity to be resilient, We have a proven ability to be resourceful here, because that's the way we're going to be ready for whatever comes our way. Whether it's the challenge of an earthquake or the opportunity of the opening Arctic, we have to be ready. And if we wait for Juno to solve our problems, or the federal government to solve our problems, or some benevolent investor from out of town to solve our problems, we're not being true to who we are. And that's why we need to be strong. And I know we are strong, and I know we can take care of ourselves if we have the chance. And we're going to do that by relying on the innovation that people have here. This state was founded on people who were innovative. People who were able to make their way when there was seemingly nothing for 10,000 years. That required innovation. People who came here 100 years ago and panned for gold. They didn't have much. They had to innovate. People who came here 50 years ago or 25 years ago. We've all had to innovate. And I want to bring that spirit of innovation, that culture of innovation, to how the municipality does business, because it's all around us. And living up to that is a crucial piece of who we are. That's why we need to have what I call intrapreneurship in the municipality. We hear a lot about entrepreneurship. But if we have the right spirit of intrapreneurship, where we examine our processes, think about the services that we're supposed to provide, remembering that we have a culture of customer service, then we can solve problems in creative ways. You know, we've done things in this arena already. We have a chief innovation officer. Chief innovation officer is cutting edge for how municipal governments run. Chief innovation officer helps us see different cutting-edge ways of solving problems. It's one of the reasons why we've gone and become an open data city. We're trying to make sure that all the data sets that the municipality collects are available to the public. There's tremendous collective wisdom in this city. And if we don't share the resources and the knowledge and the data that the municipality has, we're denying ourselves the opportunity to solve problems in ways that people might not have even thought of. We're denying ourselves the ability to collaborate with one another. That's why we've got two tools that I want to make specific mention of here that I hope this audience makes use of. One is in Anchorage Innovates. If you have a good idea, tell us what it is. We will, in all likelihood, use it. The one exception is we will not change the name of City Hall to Kitty Hall. And then there's Anchorage Works. If you're driving down the road, you see a pothole, you see a light that's gone out, or you see somebody doing a good job, you can tell us right away. And we'll get on that as promptly as possible. Because this city belongs to everybody. And just as we all have a responsibility to one another, we also have a responsibility to this community and an ability to serve it better if we know how to remain in communication. I said when I began that this is a city with more than 100 languages spoken. We need to make better use of all the people who are here. Maximize the potential that we have. I also said that we are 300,000 people. Our situation today at 300,000 is dramatically different than it was 20 years ago at 180,000. It means we have the critical mass to take care of ourselves. But in order to take care of ourselves, we have to make sure that everybody in this community is engaged. That's how we can take care of ourselves. That's how our economy will prosper. That's how we'll be safer. And so the importance of inclusion isn't a lip service panacea about simply patting people on the head and saying, yes, we're listening to you. It means aggressively going out and making sure that we are making full use of all the markets that are available to us, aggressively going out and making sure that all the talent in this community is being used to its potential, because that's all of our potential. And that's why inclusion is such a critical piece of what we do. That's why the Welcoming Anchorage Initiative has such prominence in this administration. So I said when I began that we're a city on the move. I could have said that I was trying to put the city on the map, but we're a city on the move. We cannot wait for other people to solve our problems. We cannot wait for other people to give us opportunities. We cannot ignore our responsibilities. This administration has not shirked from the SAP problem. We have confronted it. We have wrestled it to the ground, and we will see it through to completion. We have not shirked from our responsibility about making sure that the Port of Anchorage gets the attention that it needs, because the state depends on that. The military bases that call it a strategic port depend on it. And this community depends on it if we want to have low prices, if we want to have economic opportunity. We haven't shirked from our responsibility to make sure that the bond rating in this community is good. You might have heard that the state had a little bit of a rough patch when it went down and spoke to the bond raters. The experience we had was different. They like what Anchorage is doing. They like the fiscal discipline that we've shown. They like the reserves and the policies that we've put in place. Because you've got to confront the problems that exist. And that's what we've done. But at the same time, we need to remember the tremendous opportunities that are in front of us. The state's problems will eventually be fixed. Everything that's broken at some point returns to equilibrium. The question of the economy and the role of oil or the role of gas, that too, those are forces larger than what we can deal with. But our ability to chart our own course and define ourselves is as profound today as it has ever been. And because of that, I am incredibly optimistic about what Anchorage is and where Anchorage can go. Thank you.
You are tuned in to Addressing Alaskans here on 91.1 FM, Alaska Public Media. We've just heard from Mayor Ethan Berkowitz as he presented the 2016 State of the City Report. Mayor Berkowitz is about to answer questions from the audience, which were read to him by Anchorage Chamber of Commerce board member Art Clark.
And we do seem to have at least one question. Okay. Mayor Berkowitz, what are the opportunities for economic diversification you are most excited about for Anchorage?
So the opportunities I'm personally most excited about might not be the ones that manifest themselves. I mean, we need to remember that Anchorage has a diverse economy now because we're a headquarters city. Because the native corporations that are present here give us an economic foundation that didn't exist during the 80s. We have a base for becoming anything we want to be. The ones that I'm personally most interested in revolve around the energy sector, revolve around technology. I see opportunities for us to be cutting edge when it comes time to developing renewable energy here. Alaska needs it. We have the ability to ship places. We have the fourth largest cargo airport in the world. Our ships leave our ports 80% empty. So there's transportation possibilities. We have affordable energy stretching out is into the future as far as we can go. One of the things that, again, you know, this is just me talking, and I'd like to see us do, we have a power plant about to come online. And that power plant is going to have the ability to produce tremendous amounts of surplus electricity. Well, if we led the way in terms of electric transportation and produced demand for that electricity, we'd be able to create all kinds of interesting business opportunities. But again, this is just my way of looking at things. And that's why it's not up to a mayor or an administration to pick the winners when it comes time to innovating. It's up to a community to come forward. And the ideas that come forward have to engage in the marketplace of ideas and in the commercial marketplace. But we need to make sure that we have the spirit of innovation, that we can't be afraid. I mean, being risk averse in a time of turbulence is a recipe for disaster. We need to embrace risk because that's our way through where we are.
Thank you, Mayor. This one kind of piggybacks on it. Can you elaborate on how the city and the university can collaborate to create not only new business, but to be a resource to address the problems we face today?
Well, there's tremendous opportunities for the university and not just the municipality, but for the private sector and the state to collaborate more. We have opportunities related to the opening Arctic. We have opportunities related to logistics that are natural to who we are and where we are. But the difficulty I have in putting too much reliance on what the university is that the state has shown at best uneven support for the university here. If we're going to be a part of the world that creates ideas and develops technology, you need to invest in a university. And you look at what's happened around the world when Texas went through the oil shocks of the 90s, when their state's economy was reeling, they put more money into their university system, and now they have one of the premier university systems in the world. And what's the Alaskan response to an economic problem? Well, we're cutting education. That's myopic. If we're going to be ready to succeed into the future, we need to make sure that we have the infrastructure, not just the capital infrastructure, but the human infrastructure to move ahead. And that means investing in the university. As a municipality, we do a lot of things with the university. We have interns on a regular basis. I rely on advice that I can garner from them when they have it or where they have it. They do things with data analysis. They're coming out with a victimization study in the next couple of weeks that's going to be important for us to help chart policy. But all of this is collaborative. I mean, this is, I guess, one of the components I want to underscore is no one segment of this community can survive by itself. We are interlocking. We are interlocking and interdependent. Any one of us can make a go, we can survive. But for us to thrive as a community, for us to prosper, for us to show the way forward, we need to recognize that interdependence and build on it, because we'll all climb higher that way.
Thank you. This is kind of a, I'm gonna add something here. When do you see, or when or if do you see Uber coming back to Anchorage?
Well, the state has put the kibosh on it. But I will say this about the shared economy is we can play the flatterers of King Canute, who told him that he could keep the tide from rising just by denying its existence. We can't deny the existence of the shared economy, but we ought to be able to take advantage of it. I look at some of the algorithms that are built into what Uber does, and those are the kind of things that I wanted to see us use with our transportation system, our bus system, we've begun this already here with our transit system, trying to link buses and taxis and ride shares. We can do all this, and we've launched that already. I want to see us use the advantages of the shared economy and asset management that Uber has to make sure that we're not buying too many things for the municipality. Are we buying two bulldozers when one would suffice? Are we buying a backhoe when one of our neighbors has one that we could use? This is the advantage of being able to drive down cost and make efficient use of resources. And so the underlying theory behind Uber is something we embrace, but Uber specifically has difficulties because they can pretend they're not taking people around for money. They're taking people around for money, and if you're going to do that, there's consumer protection issues that have to be addressed and security issues that have to be addressed. And I guess once those are addressed to the satisfaction of the state legislature, then perhaps times will change.
This is kind of a request more than a question. Can we have the City of Lights this year?
Yeah, we've got lights planned. We're looking at ways of doing all kinds of great things, particularly with LEDs. They're very cheap, and you can do all kinds of interesting things in terms of the colors that can be developed. We're looking at doing things with maybe even projecting lights on the sides of buildings, having colored crosswalks. There's a lot of great ideas out there. And part of the reason why we want to use the City of Lights, and I remember talking to Mayor Maestrom about this. He says, you've got to do the City of Lights. And flowers. He said, I told him I'm not a green thumb, so the flowers part was tough. But we do that because we want this city to be visually attractive. We're surrounded by the most incredible natural beauty. And we've got to make sure that our city reflects that, not just for aesthetic reasons, but because when you have a beautiful city, people take better care of it. They take more pride in it. And when we have a beautiful city, it becomes a place that people want to stay. One of the challenges we have as a municipality is making sure that we can continue to attract and retain the next generation, or even this generation. I'm never quite sure where that distinction lies. And in order for that to happen, you need to have a community that has pride in itself and has cultural attributes. And the City of Lights is one of those defining cultural attributes.
Thank you. Can the mayor comment on the encryption of the police scanners blocking the free and transparent access of information to
is that,
the public?
Is that the press trying to ask that question?
This also seems to be blocking access to major news organizations, which many people rely on in terms of public safety information being delivered in a timely fashion.
I am a huge fan of transparency, but I'm a bigger fan of public safety and officer safety. And we had reached a situation with where the scanners were being abused, and they were creating both public and officer safety questions. There are ways for us to move forward to make sure that the public stays more informed and better informed, and we're exploring those. Because the notion of transparency, the notion of making sure that the public has an ability to understand not only what's going on, but to provide a check on any kind of governmental power is absolutely critical. But those questions we can solve if we have time and occasion to do it. There's some legal constraints right now with how do you get scanners to some people but not to others. But I would never, ever compromise what I felt to be an imminent and ongoing threat to officer or public safety for something that we could solve something we could solve with greater deliberation.
Thank you. How is or how can the municipality support early childhood learning and child care to assist bringing parents back to the workforce and to give an educational boost to our youngest citizens?
That's a great question. And this is going to require the municipality working more closely with the school district and working more closely with the state. And even though I've been doing this job for a year, I have less patience now with the siloing that takes place between different levels of government than I did before, because I can see where if we all brought our resources to bear, we could solve the problem. The trajectory that occurs when we provide early childhood education in terms of that child's individual choices and opportunities is profound. And some might say that's not a role of government, and perhaps it isn't. But while we're having that debate, that child's not getting an education, or that parent's not taking a job. There's a host of issues that arise along with it. So what we need to do is make sure that we provide. I mean, what the municipality is, and I've said this before, we're prepared to make municipal facilities available for entities that want to do preschool. And when we have some that exist right now, we will do what we can to expedite whatever kind of licensing is required or providing or creating a barrier. And we will work with the state, and we will work with the school district to make sure that it happens. But again, this comes back to this sort of the same issue I had when we were talking about the university system. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to the nonprofits for doing the cradle to career 90 by 2020 modeling, which is we cannot shy away from teaching our kids. That's a false economy at best. And so as the state figures out where its budget's going to come from, and I got a lot of ideas in that in case anyone wants to know. I mean, I've been there, done that. They've got to remember that we have an ongoing responsibility, and today's budget crisis shouldn't create tomorrow's handicap for a child.
Thank you. It looks like that's all the questions that we have today, so thank you very much, Mayor Berkowitz.
Thank you all.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans here on KSKA as we presented the 2016 State of the City Report delivered by Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz. This forum took place on August 22nd at the Denina Center and was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. If you missed any of today's program, or if you want to send it to a friend, we are online at alaskapublic.org. And as always, Addressing Alaskans is also available as a free podcast in the iTunes store. Thanks for tuning in with us today. Until next time, I'm your host and producer, Eric Bork.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.